go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5,
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... he's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, enough of the negative. Let's just push onward and upward because, you know, after the elections last night, we really just have to kind of like ignore the past, I suppose. We welcome Inside the Playbook here for Wednesday. John Rook and Mike Perrini from Patriots Football Weekly. I hope your favorite candidate won, Mike.
No.
Okay.
That's all I'll say about that. No,
enough of
not.
That, huh?
Yes.
You know, I kind of look at it somewhat philosophically. Going into the thing, I really didn't feel like, you know, the candidate that I voted for was going to win, but
right.
That didn't dissuade me from casting my vote anyway.
Of course
I think
not.
That,
you just don't vote for somebody because the other guy's going to win, so hey, what
yeah,
the hell, screw
you,
it.
I really believe that it's John McCain's misfortune more than anything else on two counts. Number one, he happens to have an R after his name.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest reason.
The post-Bush wave.
Exactly.
You could have had Alfred E. Newman on the Democratic ticket and you would have won.
Absolutely.
It would not have mattered who was on the ticket to me.
I totally agree. Number two, there was a wave of sentiment for Obama toward the end because I think people just got caught up in the enthusiasm and the hope and the and all that kind of stuff. He is a very charismatic individual.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it.
No question.
He's a feel-good story. I mean, it's a meteoric, historical rise. I mean, the man was in the state legislature in Illinois 4 years ago,
yeah.
And now he's president of the United States. That is,
well, hey,
think about that for a second. Think about that for a second. That is... not only remarkable, it is a downright miracle.
He's a great public speaker, but you know, so is Alan Keyes. And there are a lot of guys who speak well in public and can what's the word I'm looking for? See, I'm not a good public speaker because I can't think
he's
of the
a
word.
He's a good orator.
Right, and you can get your point across and say
yes.
What you have to say, but what
yes.
You're saying is not necessarily great. I just don't believe anything he says.
Well,
I think what you have to believe is no matter how well he says it, I don't buy into it.
Right. No, I totally agree
so
with
that.
So
that's just, hey, you know what? But that's fine. I just hope people voted because they liked what he had to say, not because they dislike Republicans and they're so fed up with the Bush administration that they're willing to put anybody in there who has a D behind their name.
We can only hope that that's the majority, the overwhelming majority of the people that voted for him. I hope that people are not small-minded enough to where, the vote for Obama because I hate Bush.
Well, no, I think that's the case, though, John. And
I
talked to somebody today or yesterday, a friend of mine, and a person said, well, you know, if you're not happy today, you're a bitter old white man or you're a bitter old racist white guy. I'm like, well, first of all, there hasn't been a black man on the ticket in my generation. So why did I not vote for Democrats in the past? Right. So,
yeah,
what was my excuse for not voting Democrat then?
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with that. It's the issue.
It has nothing to do with...
nothing whatsoever.
With
so
race.
Whoever's not happy, it's not because we're racist.
Although
we liked
race
the other
did
candidates.
Have a factor in this.
I think it
There's
did.
There's no doubt about it because I think people got swept up in the euphoria of the possibility that we might actually
right.
put
this
a minority
the
into the office.
This is the closest we've ever come, and now it's here.
Right. That's absolutely correct.
But I don't
and now,
care
you know
what color he is.
Now,
I hope he does the job because... he's our commander-in-chief now. We have to support him. That's the way I look at it.
Here's the big thing. We'd all better say a little prayer that he does the job.
We're going to lay in our pipe.
Or we're all screwed.
Yeah, exactly. I think we all need to realize that we'd better get behind him, whether you voted for him or not.
Exactly.
You'd better get behind the man and not abandon him like so many abandoned George Bush.
I agree 100%. A lot of people abandoned Bush and wouldn't support his presidency, regardless of the fact that they did not vote for him. I didn't vote for Obama, but I'm going to support Barack Obama because he's in charge of a lot of
that's
stuff
exactly
that's in
right.
our best interest.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's what you have to do. That's the only way you can look at it.
110% agree.
Well, I'm glad we agree right off the start here today.
I support the office of the presidency.
Absolutely.
Okay? And whoever is in it, that's the man I'm going to support as long as this country says this is who we've got to support or this is who we're going to put in this position. I just, you know, hope and pray that, you know, he can make chicken salad out of chicken feathers. That's the
feathers,
biggest thing,
huh?
You know?
Wow.
I could have said what's really on my mind, but after yesterday, I can't do that.
So you can't. You got to watch your words chicken. Now because apparently you have a pretty foul mouth on the radio.
Yes,
what
I do. It's just awful, isn't it? Shame on me.
I mean, I thought our show was bad, but this, you topped it. You took it to a new level. We said a lot of bad things on, no, Gary's shaking his head. No, I don't think that's going to get to that level yet.
No.
A long way to go to reach.
I think I still have a ways to go
to
before I catch up
to
you guys.
The debauchery of PFWinProgress.com.
Yeah, it's exactly right. That's why I told Fred, you're just a bad, bad influence on me.
Fred's, you know, a bad influence
spending
on
way
my...
too much time, spending way too much time listening to Fred.
Oh, well, you know, that's a big problem. Fred also has, by the way, like a 9.5 size head, because every time I come into a seat and I put the headphones on, they like droop down to my neck. So I have to adjust like several notches just to get these things to fit.
Oh, all right, goodness. Though. All right. Well, we got all that out of the way, and I promise that's going to be it for the extent of the political talk, because I'm sure we've already got some people thinking, like, oh, God, they're going to do this again today? No, no, no. No, that's not what the show's all about. Although, if you do have some comments on something that we have already mentioned, by all means, this is a free forum here, okay? Mm-hmm. So webradio@patriots.com, let it fly. Even if you're ticked off at the two of us for saying what we've been saying, that's fine. It's a free forum, you know? It can be football, certainly, but it doesn't have to be based on the absolute, not only national story of importance, but world story of importance that transpired yesterday in our voting polls across the U.S. The thing that I was actually going to get into off the top is the fact that, hey, anybody remember the fact that the Patriots are going to be now trying to extend an 8-game winning streak over the Buffalo Bills on Sunday?
It's amazing how in this division, because this division's always been competitive, and division games in general are always tough on every team, to win 8 in a row against anybody. I don't care if it's the worst.
9 games. It's actually 9.
And they haven't even been the worst, John. That's the thing. Like, right. Miami has had years where they were so bad. You remember the year this team was 14-2 and lost to Miami?
Yeah,
who was 2-14.
Right.
I mean, those strange things happen, but when the Bills play the Pats, it doesn't happen for some reason. Yeah. It's phenomenal.
That's absolutely correct. Nine games.
We have an emailer who's got something to say to you.
Go.
Our pal Jay, he signs it Jay Near Rochester. This is actually really funny. He says, John, I was listening to yesterday's podcast while I was on my lunch break. I had just taken a big bite of a tuna sub when I heard the radio call from the Texas Tech Texas game, and you called stripper and... a-hole. I laughed so hard that I spit tuna all across the table. My coworkers were not very pleased. I saw the highlights of the game on ESPN and said to myself, John is going to be cranky today. And then he goes on to say, I know I missed Nitpick Tuesday, but I figured since I am here, I would pipe in. I agree with you about the fourth down timeout and field goal as well as not going deep to Moss at all. Living in the general area of Buffalo, I am taking some heat this week. Yeah. Since I moved here in 91, it has gone from taking crap to giving crap. And hopefully I'll be on the giving end for a few more years. Go Pats.
That's great. That's an excellent email.
So you caused a little bit of a waste of tuna.
Listen, I'm very happy that I gave Jay a little bit of, shall we say, it's a good word for it, a little bit of jocularity in his life.
Jocularity, nice.
Yeah. You know, I just
between you and Eric with the big words. If it's more than three syllables, I don't know it.
Oh, jocular. That's five.
Including my last name is only three, so go figure.
Actually, I can understand why. You know, that was a little bit out of character, but you know. By the way, I thought of the name of the guy yesterday, Gary. I know he was giving me crud yesterday. Can't even remember the name of the guy who was doing the play-by-play. Brian Jensen is the play-by-play voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders, and Brian and I worked in local television together back in the early 1980s in Texas. He was a sports director at a television station in Beaumont, Texas, while I was...
Beaumont, Texas,
which is the far southeast corner of the state near the Louisiana border. And I was the sports director of a station in Waco, Texas. And so covering the old Southwest Conference, as we did, we ran into each other all the time. We got to be very good friends. Brian ended up going to work at WFAA Channel 8 in Dallas for a few years. And then after they didn't renew his contract, funny how that works in this business, because it happened to me up here too. He's a Texas Tech graduate, and he was able to latch on as the football voice of the Red Raiders, taking over for a gentleman who had been the voice of the Raiders for like 40 years, by the name of Jack Dale. And I realize this means probably nothing to anybody unless you're a Texas Tech fan. And I remember when Brian got the job, and this has been probably 8 to 10 years ago, because it was right about the time that I started doing Boston College football. And so I sent him a note and congratulated him and, you know, glad that he landed on his feet after getting the unceremonious boot from Channel 8 in Dallas. And he thought that, he told me, he said he's on cloud nine. I mean, chance to do, you know, his, the play-by-play for his alma mater was something that, you know, he had hoped that everybody have a chance to do. He says, the only thing I could think of possibly better, Rook, would be for you to be the voice of the Longhorns.
Oh, man.
And so I'm like, well, you know, I don't think that'll ever happen. And you know, sure enough, it hasn't yet, but I haven't really necessarily, you know,
not
looked
yet,
into that.
Huh?
So he is the first person I thought of, actually, after I got over all of my anger and disgust over the game on Saturday night. Brian is the first guy that I thought of after the game. I said, well, you know what? I know one person that had a hell of a night in Lubbock, Texas on Saturday night. So I'm happy for him because it's always great. You put your heart and your soul into covering the teams that you cover. I do it. I did it, you know, when I was doing Boston College, and I still do it as I do the Providence Friars games on the radio. You know, this is my 20th year to cover them. And frankly, Mike, I do it when I'm sitting at the microphone, you know, at Gillette Stadium. It is in our best interest, and I will make no bones about it. It is in our best interest, and our job is always easier. Our job is always easier when the team does well.
Oh,
would you agree with
us
that?
Too. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely. And same with you guys.
Yeah, players are more bearable and easier to deal with. And that's fine. And you know, so when they do win, it's a little bit better, but it depends too. I mean, there's different stories that emanate from a losing locker room as well. So there's always a way to do your job regardless. But yeah, players are generally in a better mood after a victory than a
absolutely.
Loss. And that goes for any team, not just this one, obviously.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, so I'm happy for him. You know, I'm ready to move on. You know, frankly, getting through that four game gauntlet that Texas did with, at a 3-1 record, I think is definitely a good thing. It's not a bad thing. I originally, before the season started, I was, you know, hoping they could win one or two, and they ended up winning three. So, you know what? All things are equal. I'm happy with that because this team is still a year away. They've only got 13 seniors on the whole team.
Wow.
So because of that, I think next year has got to be the year. And they're still not out of it this year. That's the beauty of it. All Tech has to do is lose one, and Texas will automatically then go back above them in the rankings. And if there's a three- or four-way tie or whatever in the Big 12 South, how they break the tie, you know, to play for the championship is the highest-ranked team in the BCS. And it's going to be Texas if they don't lose again.
Be a nice year for a playoff, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I do have to admit. I do have to admit. And that's the one thing, actually, that I heard that Obama had to say on the air the other night when he was on with Berman. And I didn't catch it live, but I caught the clips. Was he said that, you know, he thinks the BCS is a joke and that he'd like to see, like, an eight-team playoff. And quite frankly, I'd like to see that too.
Yeah, it's
I think
probably
it's one of the few things that I actually agree on with Obama. You can take the current structure of the four major bowls, you know, Rose, Sugar, Fiesta, Orange, and play off the four winners into a national semifinal.
Right. I think it'd be fantastic.
You're only adding.
I would actually watch because I'm not a big. I got to admit, I'm not a big college football guy. I went to URI. There's not a big rich college football tradition there.
True. Yes, that's very.
And,
true.
And you know, in this Northeast in general, John, there's not a big. It's not a big college football area, so I did not grow up watching that sport as others have. So
right,
it's not,
right.
But I watch the big games, and if there were more big games, then I would certainly watch them. So I think
no doubt, no,
from
absolutely,
a standpoint,
yeah,
but it's not just the casual fans too. I mean, I think the hardcore fans. Has started to come around. We like to see the same thing. It's more football. It's better football.
Well,
it's more at stake.
You know as well as I do. It's all about money. And the, you know,
sure.
For the you know school presidents, university presidents around the country to say that you know oh, it's too much football. It's too much time away from studies. That's bull.
Studies.
All we have to do is get
to
a number.
Anyway.
All we got to do is get to a number where they will say wow, and their jaw will open and drop to the floor, and they're in. That's all it is. It's all about the Benjamins, and we all know that. And all you're doing in this instance. Is you're adding one layer. And quite frankly, from the end of the regular season, which for most people is either the last weekend of November, which is usually Thanksgiving weekend, or the first weekend of December, for most teams, they're going to go a complete 4 weeks before they play again between the end of the regular season and a bowl game anyway.
Right.
So let's back up the bowls and get them started right there after the end of the regular season, you know, after like the 4th or the 5th of December, wherever it is, right? Start the bowls then, and that way... You're probably getting, you know, you're adding one extra week to it. You know, you got to play the semifinals before you would play the championship game, right? You'd probably be done with the college football playoff by the latest mid-January. And what are most schools doing in mid-January, Mike Parenti?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Run break.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
It makes too much sense. It makes way too much sense. So, I don't know. I don't know. I'd love to see an executive order come down. Now, I would be a total Obama fan if the first thing he did was to say, here's a presidential decree.
How quickly you will change. You will flip-flop more than Fred Kirsch.
Exactly. Yeah. Flippity-flop. And that's exactly what would happen. So, anyway, I thought that was kind of an interesting sidelight to the, you know, the whole football weekend election cycle and everything.
Well,
and
speaking of football, what do you think of the possibility of D'Angelo Hall being
released
and the possibility of possibly him coming here?
I'd say go for it. Absolutely, go for it.
I agree.
Street free agent type of thing. So, you know, you can get him for short money, right?
Yeah.
And if you can get the guy for short money, knowing that you've had the problems you've had and now you're starting to pile up injuries back there, you absolutely have to do it. This is not like earlier in the year when I was advocating for bringing in a veteran quarterback. Because, you know, let's face it, Matt Cassel has proven me wrong and proven everybody else wrong that didn't like the fact that he has, you know, come in and taken control of the offense. You've got more bodies that you have to cover for. And right now, they're just getting short of bodies. And D'Angelo Hall, maybe somehow lightning strikes twice and he can find some of that that magic that he had when, you know, he was a top draft pick. And let's bring him in here and see what he can do.
Well, we just heard the news today of Sean Crable going to IR.
Okay.
And that is not a big impact move because he had not been active.
He hasn't been active all season.
There's nothing there to worry about.
Right.
They used the roster spot to re-sign Jason Webster, who was here in camp but did not really participate at all because he was hurt and rehabbing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's a guy who has some talent but has been injured his entire career and really can't ever stay on the field. So the big concern now is he just going to be another body who goes out there and gets hurt? You already have Wheatley, who's down, and we don't know for how long, but I think his participation was limited today, according to Eric Scalvino, who was at practice and said he wasn't out there during the media portion. Lewis Sanders also was not out there, and he hasn't played in a couple of weeks now. So you're missing some people. I think possibly the re-signing of Webster indicates that they're a little bit worried about Wheatley for not just long-term, but maybe for a couple of weeks. And
Was Wheatley there today in practice?
No.
Okay.
Eric said he was not out there during those 10 minutes of calisthenics that we get to watch.
All right, fine.
So that could be a problem going forward, and maybe even if it's for just a couple of weeks, you still need a healthy body out there, and Webster fits the bill. But it says a lot when he was available. No one else wanted Webster. I think he said today that this was one of the first workouts he had, so my indication is that he has worked out elsewhere, so maybe some other teams came calling, but I don't know if anybody was terribly impressed. And, hey, Fernando Bryant was out there, too, and they passed over him to bring in a guy who'd never even got on the field in practice.
Yeah.
So it tells you what they think of Fernando Bryant.
Yeah.
They think he sucks. And that was evident when they cut him at the end of camp when he started 4 preseason games.
Right.
So there's a problem back there. I mean, the guys that are available aren't much to write home about. I mean, this is another one of those years where you're bringing in guys like Mike Stone and Nartrell Hawkins, and you're trying to make them switch positions and do things they're not used to doing. I mean, Archel Hawkins had a pretty good role here for a while, but he was a street free agent and a guy that nobody else really had any interest in. And the same thing goes for Jason Webster. The big thing with Ty Law being out there is the fact that he probably wants more money than he's worth.
Right.
So that's a big holdup. But I still feel like if they wanted Ty Law, they could have him. And I don't know if they.
I think we need to get by that.
Ship has sailed.
I think we have to realize that ain't happening. So let's move on. D'Angelo Hall is extremely intriguing.
I agree. I mean, he's still young. He was drafted in 2004.
Can't he also add to you special teams-wise?
Yeah, I would say he's got some special team value. I mean, that's always a plus with guys. But for now, I mean, they just need bodies back in the defensive backfield, first and foremost.
Right.
And a guy who could cover somebody. I mean, but you know, from what you read from some Raider fans and some people who've covered the Raiders is that he hasn't always really been in the right spot at all times this year. So there's sort of the concern that his skills are diminishing, which is kind of alarming given the fact he's only been in the league for, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Exactly. The guy was a lockdown corner in college.
He was the 8th overall pick in 2004.
I know.
And the Falcons are trading him for a second-round pick.
He absolutely was one of the best defensive backs in college I'd seen in a long time when he was playing at Virginia Tech. And that was when I was doing the BC game, so I got to see him every year up close and personal. I always thought that he would have made not only a good cornerback, but he's a great kick returner, punt returner, special teams guy. I thought he'd be able to contribute immensely and immediately, and for whatever reason, he just has not lived up to any response or any of his advanced billing. And so in this regard, that's why this is such a perfect thing. Here's a guy that could very well have that quote-unquote chip on his shoulder, and the Patriots have made, obviously they've made...
Right.
a lot of chicken salad, chicken feathers over the last few years, pulling up veteran guys who are looking for another shot.
And you know, it's just ironic how things have worked this year when they've put somebody in the lineup in a fill-in role. He automatically gets hurt, it seems. The minute Lamont Jordan goes in there and starts making some plays, he gets hurt. And then Morris replaces him, and he gets hurt. And that's just the running back situation. Now you look at the cornerback, and Wheatley goes in there after Delta O'Neal got knocked out of the game a week ago, and a Wheatley starts, and then he gets hurt against the Colts. You know, it's just, I mean, it's a revolving door, and it's been that way all year, and I don't know if there's any light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe Webster can stick, but, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if, honestly, Webster goes out there on Sunday and gets hurt somehow, because it just would be protocol.
And then
it's the way, it's worked all year.
Then you have your excuse to bring in a guy like Hall. Now, yes. in this regard, I mean, I think we saw where, you know, both Jonathan Wilhite and Mike Richardson got a chance to play. I know that they were both matched up at various times against a guy like Anthony Gonzalez out on the field on Sunday night, and mixed results, if not, you know, worse than that for both of those guys. So are you of the opinion now that one or the other is going to get an opportunity to sort of, you know, win this job over?
Yeah, I would think so. I don't think anything is set in stone at that right cornerback position, and it hasn't been that way all year. I mean, Lewis Sanders started the first game, and by the time Delta O'Neal got caught up, he was a starter. But we've already talked in detail about his struggles this year, and so now Wheatley was stepping forward a bit and getting some playing time. Wilhite is more of a slot defender, so I wouldn't see him on the outside as a starter. I don't think that's his role. That's what Wheatley is here to do, not Wilhite. So if Wheatley can't go, who do you put out there? It's going to have to be Webster, or unless O'Neal gets back in the lineup. So
right.
You have some rotation issues there with who's going to get the playing time. You know, and the coverage wasn't great against Indianapolis. So we all agree that I thought Manning, when he wanted to throw and had to throw, was making throws at will.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was picking them apart. I think the only thing that stopped the Colts was themselves. Just insistent on trying to establish the run because the Pats were playing nickel defense. Well, you know something? Let me tell you something. You're Peyton Manning, you've got Reggie Wayne, you've got Marvin Harrison, you've got Dallas Clark, you've got Anthony Gonzalez. They have Terrence Wheatley, Delta O'Neal, I don't even remember who the hell was out there. That's how low it's sunk.
Yeah, right.
You have to trust that your receivers will get open regardless of what the coverage is. Those receivers are better than those defensive backs. I don't care if you put – I mean, you could put five guys. You could put Gary, myself, you, Andy, and Fred back there in nickel coverage. It doesn't matter. Throw on us. It makes – their game plan made little sense to me. I thought they should have been throwing all night. And it was pretty clear from the start that Adai wasn't going to get anything because the D-line did a very nice job stopping the run. And that was apparent early on. So I would have ditched that running game, and I would have kept throwing until they stopped me. And they didn't stop them, John. They never stopped them. The Colts had two red zone possessions, and they scored touchdowns on both possessions, on touchdowns to Anthony Gonzalez.
Yep.
And they made it look easy.
Yep, that's exactly
and even before
right.
the half, they ran the two-minute offense before the half, and they were moving the ball pretty well then, too. They didn't have any timeouts. They couldn't stop the clock. Manning completed this long pass, and Marvin Harrison, who retired about 5 years ago, hasn't told anybody, stays in bounds inexplicably, and can't stop the clock, and therefore the half ends. They would have scored on that drive, too, probably. They were moving it at will through the air, and in a season in which they have not had a ton of success throwing the football.
Nope.
That alarms me going, see, Fred's all up in arms like, this is a great loss. No, it bothers me because
it's the same problem, John.
I
totally disagree with that. This was not a good loss.
No, and especially the way they lost.
And Mike, I'm one of those guys that never thinks any loss is good. I could see where
if you were
a team that you were downtrodden and you hadn't competed for a number of years, and you go in and maybe you play the defending Super Bowl champs and you hold
right.
them to a couple of scores and you lose by three or whatever. Now, I could see where that could be termed a good loss if, of course, you know, you've been used to being down all the time. But
right, when you're not a good team, you can have a good loss.
Totally. Absolutely.
This is supposed to be a good team. And regardless of who's
correct.
A quarterback, it's a 5-2 team coming in against a team that was 3-4. Now, I get the whole desperation angle, but a lot of teams are desperate and still can't win. That's irrelevant to me. You were the better team, and I still think they're a better team than this Colt team. I think this Colt team, like Paul said this afternoon, is a shell of its former self. And Manning just threw at will. And that alarms me. And what also alarms me is their inability to score in the red zone, which I thought they had corrected, because it was very good here at home the last 2 weeks against St. Louis and Denver. And I thought, okay, they've turned the corner now, and Castle's maturation is a sign that they're starting to move forward here, and they're making more plays inside the 20, and they're actually punching it in. And then they go out there against the Colts, and it's 1-for-4. One touchdown and 4 trips. And that's the big difference in the game. That's a big, big – they score on one more of those possessions, they might win the game.
Yeah. I've never thought, ever, at any point in time that any loss is termed a good loss. Yeah. And I certainly thought that after Sunday night, because there were so many opportunities for this team to take control, to seize it. And they just could not ever get over the hump. And because of that, I felt frustration more than anything else. And the problems that I saw were all correctable. I mean, you know, there are questionable decisions made by the coaching staff, questionable decisions called, you know, on the field, especially defensively, even offense. I mean, there were too many things I thought that transpired in the game that the Patriots could ultimately control. There's not a lot that, you know, was out of their control other than the fact that, you know, sometimes you have to give, you know, the other team credit for making plays, and the Colts did that on a couple of occasions. But really, honestly, you look at the big picture. I mean, they held Peyton Manning to 18 points. What's wrong with that? Nothing's wrong with that.
Well, what's wrong with that is the two red zone possessions and the fact that he completed almost every pass he threw.
Yeah.
The only thing they did well was stop
red zone defense is a problem.
And here's the thing, John. They didn't have a lot of possessions. The Pats offense moved the ball efficiently and chewed up a lot of the clock. God forbid they did not, and they had to punt more. Otherwise, the Colts would have had more drives and probably had more points.
Mm-hmm.
I think their offense was their best defense on Sunday, not their defense.
Well, I kept wanting the offense on Sunday to throw down the field.
And it did not.
And
the
most frustrating part that I had was not attacking those Indianapolis corners when one guy was a stinking street free agent.
They took a guy out of a Smoothie King, you know?
That's what I'm saying. They just I could not believe they couldn't at least throw the ball one time to Randy Moss in the first half.
And it goes back
that
to the
alone
same theory.
Stands out to me as a reason why this is not a good
exactly.
loss. It's a stupid loss because they didn't take advantage of the opportunities that were presented.
And it goes back to the same philosophy about the Colts game plan offensively. Again, you've got Keewan Ratliff. I don't even know how to say the damn name. Yep. The guy they picked up off the street, they had two other cornerbacks out of the lineup. They had a safety out of the lineup. I don't care how many guys they drop back in coverage. These guys are nobodies.
Exactly.
And you've got Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Let them run.
That's
let them
exactly
do some things. But I just to get back to the other point about this possibly being a good loss, because there were two games that people brought up to me and said, well, look at these two games by comparison. One of them was the Giants last year in the season finale against New England, trying to thwart their 16-0 season. And they lost that game, but they played hard, and they all credited that game with helping them during their playoff run. Well, the difference there is that game didn't matter to the Giants. They were already in, and they already had their seed set. They knew where they were playing next week in the postseason. That was not a meaningful game. This game could mean something in the playoff race. Because of this loss, you're now in a three-way tie in the AFC East.
Right.
Far more of an impact game. The second game that was brought up was 2001, when the Patriots lost a close game at home to the Rams. In November, I think we all remember that game at Foxborough. But the difference here too, the Rams were the best team in football that year. The Colts aren't. Colts were 3-4.
Right.
And plus, we didn't know much about those 0-1 Patriots yet. This was before the whole dynasty era began. This Patriot team, for better or for worse, and regardless of the fact that Brady's out, is held to a higher standard. And the Colts have not been good this year. So those games aren't even comparable. Those are two different sets of circumstances. This was not, in any way, shape, or form, a good loss. Were there encouraging things within? Yes. I think Castle's play continues to improve.
Yes. You can always find the silver lining in the otherwise dark cloud.
But that doesn't make it a good loss.
No, it doesn't.
Because now you're in a dogfight, and now you've got three division games in a row, which I think among those teams in the East, they're still the favorite to me. I think the way they've played recently,
they should
the favorite.
Be, but I also like the fact that I'm listening. I don't know if it was last night or the day before, but I'm listening, you know, on NFL Live on ESPN, and you know, some of those, you know, yakety heads are still saying, well, I think the Jets and the Dolphins are the favorites in the division. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. What are they watching?
Dolphins?
Yes, Dolphins. Now, I did say in yesterday's show that the Dolphins, of the three teams in the AFC East, which one worried me the most down the stretch run, it was Miami, because Miami has by far and away the easier
yes.
schedule of anybody else in the division, and they're only a game back at 4-4. So they've already gone further than anybody thought they would get this year. And so now the Dolphins have to be considered a true contender, especially since they already own a win over the Patriots.
They could be 6-4 heading into that game at Miami. That could be a real tough spot for both
sure,
teams.
Sure could be.
And we don't know what New England will be at that point. They could be 7-3, and maybe they have that game edge. But maybe they split these next two, and now you're looking at a tie. I mean, God forbid somebody else is 7-3 and you lose to Miami and you fall into third place. A lot can happen in these three weeks if they're not on top of their game.
I said this again yesterday, Mike. I said these next 3 weeks, this is the season.
I agree,
for all
it is the whole
purposes.
Season. I agree,
this
too.
This is the season. The Patriots need to come out of this no worse than 2-1.
And the Bills are in a big spot, too, because they've already lost two division games. And they cannot afford to fall to 0-3.
I agree. So, this is a huge game for the Bills.
So if we go by the same theory that desperation equals victory, then I guess we have to assume the Bills are going to win. Because
you have to assume at least that the Patriots are going to have their hands full. Now, I would also argue that, you have to win your home games, especially within the division.
Yeah.
So that also puts, the onus on the Patriots, which makes this Sunday's game pretty special. I mean, this should be a great game.
This is fun.
Right to the finish.
This is definitely fun what we have to enjoy these next 3 weeks. Because we got Buffalo coming here Sunday. The Jets come here on a Thursday night,
right.
Which I'm not too happy about because Peter Manfredo is fighting on Thursday night and I want to miss that fight.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. That same night.
IBO world title fight at the Dunkin' Donuts Center, and I get screwed. This team plays one Thursday game in 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's got to be this Thursday.
You don't get to see Peter Manfredo win.
Well, it's on TV, though.
Saki
Obika.
That's going to be a good Contender one versus Contender three, by the way.
Yes. And they also have Canine Brundage. And Gary Brewer coming in, too. So it's like the whole Contender alumni.
Good grief.
Joining the party. But anyway, back to the football that we're here that we get paid to talk about.
Better not tell my son. He loved the Contender, so
nice.
He'd want tickets.
We have that Bills game. The Jets come here on Thursday, and then it's off to Miami for a big showdown against a team that just whooped you by 25 at home.
At home, right.
Earlier this season. So that's a huge, huge game. And I tell you, it's so clairvoyant on the schedule makers. It almost seems like they knew this was going to happen, but... Here you go, a three-way tie, and all three of those teams are going to be on the field in the next 3 weeks playing each other. And now, it might not end up shaping out or shaking out like we think it will. Maybe they just beat up each other, and they're all still in the same spot after 3 weeks. But I tend to think that this is an opportunity for the Patriots to separate themselves from the pack a little bit.
Absolutely.
Going into the stretch run, because their schedule's not all that difficult either, John. The only difference is, in December, they're on the road a lot. But the quality of opponents, they play Seattle, who is terrible, and Oakland's terrible. And at Buffalo should be tough, but the quality of the opponents is not great. And I think they could beat Arizona here.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh coming here could be tough, but I don't think their schedule is necessarily daunting in the last 5-6 weeks. The volume of road games would be a concern because since beating the Jets in week 2, this team has not had a signature road win. And that kind of bothers me, too.
Well,
that's another thing that bothered me about Sunday.
I think
Sunday.
You have to realize that to me, the sign of a mature team and the sign of a potential championship team is a team that can beat teams not only on the road, but beat good teams on the road. And this team, this Patriots team, is not there yet.
Not yet.
They could have taken a step toward that had they won this game last Sunday, which is why I'm absolutely incredulous that anybody would term this a good loss.
Right.
It's not a good loss. It's
won
a
that
bad
game.
Loss.
If they had won that game, we'd be talking about all the poise they showed on the road in a tough place to play.
And you'd be talking about 6-2, a game lead in hand, with 3 coming up in the division, and you control your destiny just like you did a year ago. And I guarantee you the national media would be talking about the Patriots almost in the same breath as they did a year ago. And without Tom Brady, that, my friends, would be a story.
Yeah, absolutely. And instead, they dropped the ball big time. And
exactly.
A lot of little things added up. I mean, we know about the Jabbar Gaffney drop. We know about David Thomas's penalty at the end. All those things factored in. But the root of the problem to me is the same stuff that's been a problem all year, and it's red zone offense, and it's pass defense.
Pass defense,
and
red zone offense.
I don't know how that improves.
Sure.
I don't know how the secondary is going to improve with the same people out there all year. You would think with Castle's maturity – at some point, the red zone thing will click, but we thought that the 2 weeks prior to that too,
right?
And it hasn't, and then it goes back to square one again. So I'm a little worried, but I'm excited though because this is going to be a lot of fun these next 3 games. So I'm
Absolutely.
Excited about it, but I think there's a sense of trepidation, and there should be.
Yeah, there should be, and I know. Of course, there's a just a slight part of me, Mike, that's like so used to what's gone on here around the last few years. It's kind of like. No, I don't like this at all. I'd rather kick the crud out of everybody.
Well, that's the irony. Is everybody at the beginning of the year and Brady gets hurt says, oh, this will be fun now. Well,
yeah. Well,
fun,
everybody
yes.
else around the league is looking at it. This should be fun.
Yeah.
Patriots right now are, kind of wringing their hands. But, yeah, this is what you want. You want a game that means something. And this year, you got a game that means something every stinking week. So while that may not be great
you know, for a lot of Patriots fans, it's fantastic for fans in the AFC East.
I still think it's more fun to beat the crap out of everybody, too.
Well, of course it is. Of course it is, because you like to be the kingpin for as long as you can, but you have to realize that isn't going to happen. That doesn't happen in the real world. It's certainly not going to happen in the NFL. So, you know, and it's so rare even so in the NFL, because the NFL, as we all know, is a, you know, let me wrap this up with a political comment. The NFL is socialism personified.
Ooh, so is our presidency. Okay.
It is. It's socialistic, because the NFL wants parity, and parity means everybody's 8-8, and may the best team win. And so the Patriots have done that, along with, you know, just a handful of other teams, better than anybody else over the last decade, or not even quite the decade, right?
Yes.
You'd admit that, correct?
Absolutely.
And so now the Patriots are coming back to the pack. They're spreading the wealth.
Oh, that's good.
They're spreading the wealth. They're allowing
the redistribution
other teams
of wealth,
the opportunity.
The
that's exactly what's going on here.
It's true.
It's exactly true. What's going on here. So, yeah, now that, you know, you're going to get a battle, hey, all right, here you go. This is what you got. We got a battle.
Hey, my buddy, your and your best friend, Strippers, sent me an email a while back, and I want to read it just because we were, Andy and I were kind of bitching about our accommodations this weekend.
Oh, what was wrong with your accommodation?
Well, the hotel gym lacked in terms of heavy dumbbells.
And you got to have dumbbells in the gym. You can't do with a walker or the, you know, the treadmill or, you know, the bike.
I don't run. You've seen me. I'm thin as it is. So
all I need is an exercise bike.
I'm trying to put on weight here. I mean, other people are trying to lose it. I'm trying to put on weight. And all they had were 35-pound dumbbells. So the stripper says, just hold the dumbbells overhead and squat. Well, I don't want to squat. I want to work the guns. Plus, I got a back thing. I haven't squatted in a long time. My back doesn't respond well to squats.
Well, you know,
all.
Hey, how about the buns?
Getting old.
You got to work them out, too.
The glutes, huh?
Yeah.
I've seen guys on the
guns
butt blaster
buns,
in
baby.
The gym, and it's not a good fit. The butt blaster is for the ladies. You know, we'll find other means to work the glutes. I'll do other leg exercises, but just squats, you know, I'm not 21 anymore. I can't do squats.
Oh, okay.
Keel over in pain.
But doesn't anyone want to talk
football?
In a couple
of decades.
No, we don't. We just talk 2 hours of football and PFW in progress. Now John Rook is switching things up.
Gary. Who's switching things up? I didn't switch them up.
Gary gets mad and we stray from the pack.
Stray from the pack and we don't do football on this show? We've been talking politics for the last 2 days.
There's a little bit of everything.
Our
buddy Jeffrey also emails us, and he actually touched on a point that we just made.
Okay.
He says, you guys were talking about corners. The Colts had Ratliff, and I don't even know who the other corner was. The same thing should apply to New England. We have Moss and Welker. Why can't we exploit the Colts' corners? This is where our game plan stunk.
That was, to me, one of the biggest failings of the entire game on Sunday.
Both teams should have thrown more.
Was not attacking the corners of the Colts.
I agree.
Until too late. They did finally a little bit in the second half with Moss, a little bit more with Welker. I mean, you've got to remember, Welker didn't have a catch in the first half either.
No.
So that's why I'm like, you know, what in the world are they doing?
And I don't think Moss even had a ball thrown to him.
I was totally and completely dumbfounded by the offensive game plan in the first half. Just made absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Jeffrey says, Madden said it best, Castle takes what they give him, Brady takes what he wants. I said that
on yesterday's show, and
that's
the best thing. That is the absolute best thing that John Madden has said in 5 years.
Oh, I agree. I think he's 100% dead on. Brady would not care if they were playing nickel.
How do you ragu?
He would be slinging that rock downfield.
Yep.
No question about it.
Absolutely right. All right, let's get a break in here, and then I want to take a little bit more time looking more closely at the Bills. And I also want to take a look at some of the personnel groupings and some of the individuals on both sides of the football and get Mike Parenti's viewpoint of what their midseason grade might be.
Ooh, grading, okay.
How about that one? You like
that
one? See what you think, because, you know, you watch these guys, you see them, and let's get a little bit of insight from you. So that we're going to do that coming up here inside the playbook in a moment.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place, a once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly,
I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy, and the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips, and we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So, stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com. Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
I'm a scat man.
You just don't get enough good scat, you know? That's big. If you can find some really good quality scat. Can you scat, Mike?
No comment.
That's good stuff. I like it. Welcome back as we continue with Patriots Playbook
here for a Wednesday. John Rook with PFW's Mike Parenti. Team is 15-1. 15-1 in games following a loss since the beginning of the 2003 season. So not a lot of back-to-back opportunities for L's for the Patriots.
No.
Although you'd have to say that, you know, this certainly could be one. But we spoke with Mark Kelso yesterday, who does the color on the radio broadcast on the Bills radio network, and he definitely thinks that the Bills team is reeling a little bit, having lost three of the last four, and asked him basically what was up with that. And his thought was that his team is just banged up. And I said, well, aren't we all? And we just both kind of got a little laugh out of that. But fact is that you know, there are some key injuries in Buffalo's side, not the least of which is a guy like Schoble at defensive end, which ought to make Matt Light very happy.
Yes, sure.
And to me, that could be one of the biggest losses of them all. That one and Whitner at cornerback, certainly going to make them, I think, somewhat pliable. And frankly, here's another chance for the Patriots offense to take advantage, you know, of some perceived weaknesses like they didn't do against the Colts.
The Whitner loss is huge because he played a number of roles in that secondary, whether it be at corner, nickelback in some packages, or playing kind of a hybrid role as a linebacker close to the line of scrimmage. And Bill talked about it today and just how versatile a player he is. And without him now, you don't really have anybody else who can do that, because there aren't a lot of guys who can play those roles on a multiple basis game by game. So it's hard to take one guy and do it. You may have to ask two or three guys to fill in, and the quality and the production is definitely going to drop because of that. Now, Schoble's been out for a while, and they've had to deal with that. And he may be out for the season, too, with this lingering leg injury. So
right.
There may be no hope of him coming back, even for the season finale against New England, depending on how important that game ends up being. But I think the big loss here is indeed Whitner, because of the fact you have a matchup against a team that needs to throw the ball more. And if you have any sort of weakness in your secondary, the Patriots should try to exploit that. I can't guarantee that they will, but my guess is they will try this week. Now, I've been saying that for 3-4 weeks against bad pass defenses, and it hasn't happened
and
yet.
And we haven't seen anything materialize yet.
So
which
I can't
is
really
why
say definitively.
It's very troubling to me that we're not seeing this.
I just don't think they trust Castle 100%, John. I really don't. And I think a lot of people still...
Well, if they didn't trust him 100%, then by God, they should have gotten a quarterback they could trust.
Well, I agree. I mean, it almost makes it seem like they don't have much confidence going forward for the season if they can't trust the quarterback to make all the throws. They obviously are going to call different plays for different quarterbacks. That I understand. But they talk so much about his improved pocket presence and how he's not taking the sacks anymore and how he's stepping up now and he's scrambling at the right time. Well, if that's the case, then I would take the training wheels off and let him try to throw the ball downfield a little bit more. I've just seen one too many screens or quick sprints to the right side, dump offs and check downs. I want to see some bombs.
Yep.
And I think you have the opportunity to do that. The one thing that I heard on Sunday was that they had set up for that big play the entire game because they ran the ball so well, and they finally drew the defense in, and they lofted it over the top to Gaffney, and he drops it, kicks it, then falls on his face.
Yeah.
And then it went back to it again. It's almost like they were too timid to try the play again or try a similar play.
How about something out of the Wildcat formation like, you know, Miami did to the Patriots, you know?
Well,
throw
it
downfield rather than that stinking screen.
But they did try that, and they had Falk behind center and Castle split out to the right, but they didn't have a back standing alongside Falk.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do there? Obviously, Falk's going to either run the ball or throw it. So there wasn't much versatility on their Wildcat play. That, to me, is still something that is a work in progress, and if they can kind of figure out a better formation and a better way to run it that's more effective, then I think you could see it.
Didn't you get a sense, though, that weren't you just a little bit disappointed that the Patriots ran that? I mean, didn't it seem like the Patriots are finally copying what other teams are doing? And hasn't it been in the past that the Patriots were the ones setting the trends offensively and others were copying them?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm surprised they even tried it at all. I mean, they've had direct snaps to Falk in the past, but not to that degree.
Well, they've done that primarily when they were in extra point going for two situations
right. Or
short yardage situations.
Yeah, it just kind of like reeks of desperation. Like they're trying something to get the offense going. Let's direct snap to Kevin Falk.
I'll tell you how you get the offense going. Let Castle throw deep. That's how you
throw
get it going.
Throw against guys who were just signed off the street.
No kidding. I mean, come on. It can't be that obvious, can it?
Well, no. I just think my assumption is they see what Indianapolis is playing, and again, goes back to Madden's point, they'll take what they give us instead of us taking it. And so they run the football, and they ran it well, John. They ran the ball pretty darn well, I thought, on Sunday.
140 yards. I thought that was really well, considering not one of their three top backs was available.
But that should set you up for more than one shot downfield. They literally took one shot the entire game.
I know. And that was the one to Gaffney, and he dropped it.
Right.
Yes.
And the only other shot they took was a desperation heave in the fourth quarter that gets picked off
because
Castle got hit on a throw. So, I mean, to me, if you're going to run that much, you got to be setting up for something a little bit bigger or something with more of more volume. Go to the well again.
Absolutely, go to the well again.
I really didn't get it. I really didn't.
Well, let's talk about maybe some of the players who are getting it, to borrow your phrase there just a little bit, on both sides of the football. I'd kind of be interested. I've got three guys on each side of the football that I'd like sort of a mid-season report card on. These are three guys that, at least in my opinion, I thought the book was sort of open with. In other words, you know, it could go either way. I mean, it would be great for the Patriots to get solid performances out of them. But frankly, before week one, we didn't really know what we were going to get. And so I'm curious now as to what you think the Patriots have at this stage with these individuals. Does that sound okay?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. Let me start then defensively.
I give you a letter grade.
You'll give me a letter grade, okay. Right? Let me start defensively then with the rookie Jerod Mayo.
A. No question about it. He's been in on a lot of snaps. Played a lot early in the year, and he's been their most consistent playmaker to me. Now, he makes the rookie mistakes you make from time to time, but nothing that has killed him at all. So I've been very impressed, and the fact that he's out there as much as he is shows you the confidence the coaching staff has in him.
Fair enough. All right. Let me give you one from the line then. Richard Seymour.
C+, to be fair. I heard so much coming out of camp of how he was healthy, and he had slimmed down a bit, and this was going to be a monster year, but... You know what? The reoccurring theme in all three losses has been the lack of a pass rush. And we didn't even really talk about that today in our analysis of the game. Is they didn't lay a finger on Peyton Manning. They didn't lay a finger on Chad Pennington. They didn't lay a finger on Phillip Rivers against the Chargers either. And that's alarming. And I know this is not the defense designed to get sacks from the D-line, but I think the guys like Seymour, Warren, Wilfork should be putting more pressure at some point on the opposing quarterback. And I've only seen it in spurts from Seymour, not consistently.
All right, and then I want to go to the secondary for a guy who's one of the few that's actually been back there, at least playing, and that's Ellis Hobbs.
I would say B+.
Really?
Yeah, I think he started out strong this year. I thought he was playing closer to the ball, taking more chances, covering his receiver, which we hadn't seen enough of in the past. But then it's kind of slipped a bit, and now you're starting to see the separation again. That was a problem last year where he's not getting close enough to his receiver. So it's been up and down, but I think to me, and I could be wrong, the positives outweigh the negatives, and plus you factor in what he's done on special teams as the best kick return in the league. You want to give me a total grade for all that would be
okay.
A B.
All right, when you factor into the special teams capabilities, I could see a B+. Sure,
yeah.
He is leading the AFC in kick returns,
the most explosive kick returner so far.
Right, okay.
At least one of them.
Okay, let's go to the offensive side now, and let's go to the obvious one, Matt Cassel. What's your grade?
B-.
Okay.
So he's borderline C. I mean, there are positives, obviously, and he's gotten better over time, and I think he has good legs, got a pretty good motor, as Bill would say. I think he's pretty smart back there and doesn't make a lot of dumb throws and dumb mistakes, but I've been very disenchanted with his play in the red zone. When they get inside the 20, it just falls apart, and that has to improve. And early on, certainly, he was pretty indecisive about when to tuck the ball and run, or when to let the play develop. And that's something that comes with experience, and he's starting to get that. So that's why he, to me, is still in the B category. But he has to work on, the red zone offensive production has to improve.
Okay.
Whatever the case may be, it's not all him, but it ultimately falls on his shoulders. So, yeah, I would say B-.
I'm going to cheat just a little bit here because it's really hard for me to single out one player. So I'm going to go with a unit, and I'm going to ask you about the offensive line.
C+. Now, they haven't been
healthy. I don't think I would have gone that good.
Really?
Well, the only reason is because a guy like Stephen Neal has been hurt. But,
yeah.
I think we've seen how much better a line this is when Neal is healthy. And he started, against the Colts, too.
That's the thing, right.
And they rushed for 140 yards. And, again, I know it's against the Colts. They're not one of the best run defenses. But still, I like the trending. And the trending is definitely on an uptick with Neal back in the lineup. And it's the first time all year, I might add, that they had both a healthy Neal and Nick Kazier starting as they did a year ago.
And that's why I can't kill them on the grade, because they haven't been healthy. And I think Billy Yates at times has filled in nicely. Mark Lavoie did a nice job for Nick Kazier at right tackle. The protection clearly hasn't been as good as it was last year when we had three guys in the Pro Bowl. But I think part of that, too, John, is Cassel. I think he takes a lot of sacks that Brady would have avoided. So that maybe changes your evaluation of the line. Brady may step up in the pocket and avoid the play and get rid of the ball, and you say, wow, hey, good protection. Well, you know, you look at the stat sheet and say, well, they only had two sacks. That must not be too bad. But yet, when it's Castle back there, he may take an additional two or three sacks because he doesn't step up enough, and you say, wow, five sacks. The line sucked today. Yeah. So I think it's a little bit of both. I think they're starting to get healthy, and like you said, having that full unit out there on Sunday and rushing for 140 yards, probably no coincidence.
Well, all very, very good points by you. I was going to ask you about the offensive backfield and the running backs, but frankly, none of them have been on the field long enough
it's hard to
get
a grade.
I think you had to give them a big fat I as an incomplete.
I would agree with that, absolutely.
So in that regard, let me ask you about Randy Moss.
C.
Okay.
I think there have been times where I don't think he's running through and completing blocks. And I'm not saying he's to the level he was in Oakland where he just was disenchanted and not interested at all. I think he still is running out there and he's running hard. But I think there are some times where, you know, he's not completing plays. And there have been a couple of times where he hasn't gone up for the ball and fought for the ball against corners. And we all too often credit the corner for that, for making a great play. But he's a great player too. And every now and then you expect him to come down with the ball. You know, if you go up against a Champ Bailey, let's say six times on two bang-bang plays, you know, two big passes to Moss covered by Champ Bailey, it should be 50-50 to me on how many catches and how many deflections there are, because Champ Bailey is great and so is Randy Moss. And so my point is you can't just chalk up every one of them to great defense. Every now and then it's on Moss to make the play too, and I don't think he has made enough in those spots this year. He's had a couple of drops. Everybody drops him now and then. I just think it's you saw this coming because he caught 23 touchdowns last year, mm-hmm. and you knew he couldn't duplicate that. So it was going to be a down year by his standards, but he still could have been great. And regardless of all the factors, with Castle being in there and Brady being out and all things considered, I don't think he's been great.
Okay. I've got one more for you, and I guess it's based on the fact that, you know, this season got off to shall we say an unexpected beginning. I mean, nobody expected to have happen what happened in the first quarter of the very first game with Tom Brady. So in that light, with everything that has transpired thus far this season, how would you grade the coaching staff?
The whole staff?
I'd say you have to put them all together. Now, if you need to differentiate and think that one coach has done an exceptional job or an exceptionally poor job, you can add that as an addendum to this.
Then if I'm just grading the entire staff, I'd say B-.
Okay.
And the thing is, they're in the Bs because they're 5-3 without Tom Brady, who is supposed to be the most indispensable player in the league
and
the reigning NFL MVP, and they're tied for first.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, there have been some questionable calls, and it's not just all in the Colt game, but I think there have been times where they have not adjusted properly. I was very disappointed with the Miami game and how many times the Dolphins ran that play and beat them on it, and they never made the adjustment. Or, for example, in San Diego, when they made such a commitment to stop the run, and they've given up 40-yard bombs, and they're not making the appropriate adjustment there either. So I just think they've been a little bit quick on the draw at times. And like we talked about, they've scaled things back for Castle, and I think they haven't let go of it soon enough to the point where he should be given a little bit more leeway back there. They've been a little bit conservative at times calling plays. But you know what? Again, they're dealing with a ton of injuries, and they're in a three-way tie for first place going into the second half of the season. You can't fail them. You can't give them an A. You may sound like a fence sitter when you say it, but they're right around a B-. They're closer to a C, in my opinion, than an A. I'll put it that way.
Okay. Yeah. I would share similar sentiments where the coaching staff is concerned. Before I let you go, then, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on the game this Sunday, simply because of the magnitude of the game, as we've talked about here in the opening hour of the program. Tie for first. The Bills have already lost a couple of divisional games. They've dropped three of the last four. This is the first of three straight divisional games that the Patriots have. And yes, I do believe this is the fulcrum of the Patriots 2008 season. This season is going to go one way or the other because of these 3 weeks. So how do you think they get started?
I think they'll win this game on Sunday. I think Buffalo's heading in the wrong direction. I think the Patriots are heading in the right direction, despite this quote-unquote good loss on Sunday, which we both disagree with. But they have played better of late. Buffalo is starting to come back to the pack a little bit now. They've got some injuries. The shine has sort of worn off Trent Edwards a bit at quarterback now. And this is a young team. Bill talked about it today. It's a good team, but it's a good young team. And we'll see how they handle the magnitude of a big playoff race on the road. That I want to see. there are still enough veterans on this New England team who have been down this road before where I trust them more than I trust Buffalo at this point. Plus, the game is here, which is a big factor. I think it all adds up to a Patriots victory.
All right, good stuff. Mike, as always, appreciate the time on a Wednesday. Excellent contributions today.
Hey, no problem, John. I appreciate it, too.
I'm glad you save your best stuff for us.
I absolutely do. I get all the potty humor and the jokes out of the way on the other show. Come here, we talk some real football.
See, that's how we roll. That's only because you sit next to Andy Hart.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah, you're not in Andy's chair today, are you?
I'm not. I'm in Fred's chair, believe it or not.
See? Yeah, that's what it was. Fred's been sitting in that chair too long. That's
why
I
agree.
Fred and John sit there, so I'm surprised you didn't swear today.
Oh.
That's true. You could have. You got one final opportunity if you need to.
Well, you know, our pal stripper emails me back now.
Okay.
And he's like, Mike, if you can't do 10 pull-ups, you have no business doing any curls. We didn't talk about pull-ups. We're talking about squats. I do pull-ups every day. I do back exercises.
All right. Well, see, good.
You do pull-ups back and biceps. You work your. I work my back first to warm up the biceps. Then you hit the biceps hard at the end.
Do you think a guy like strippers does curls?
I don't know what he does.
I think he probably does. He probably does them with a 16-ounce variety. That would be my guess.
Well, that's good. I like strippers then. No, I think strippers is the fitness aficionado from what I hear. So. I appreciate his advice, but obviously, okay. Yes, we do pull-ups here. So
good stuff.
How do you roll?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you, John.
All right, we'll see you soon. You got it, Mike Parenti, Patriots Football Weekly. Let's pause here for another timeout, and coming up in just a few minutes, we'll have the conference calls with members of the Buffalo Bills, head coach Dick Geron among them, and we've got some other items to pass along as the Bills and the Patriots battle this Sunday in Foxborough for at least a share of the AFC division lead. We'll continue with more Inside the Playbook.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So, stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is the ultimate shopping, dining, and entertainment destination in New England. What's your Patriot Place experience?
We took the kids to a movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe and finally went to Red Robin. The burgers were amazing. It was so much fun. Everyone loved it.
We had girls' night out at Patriot Place last weekend. A little shopping, dinner at Davio's. It's just like the one in Boston. And we had drinks at the cutest little wine bar called Tastings.
Experience Patriot Place. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day.
Honestly, I'm here about once a week. I always find great deals at Christmas Tree Shop and Old Navy. And the shoes at Off-Broadway are unbelievable.
Patriot Place is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough with convenient and free parking.
Bass Pro Shop and Eastern Mountain Sports have everything I need for my camping and hiking trips. And we love CBS Scene Restaurant. They've got about a million TVs, and their outdoor deck looks right into Gillette Stadium. It's so cool.
Log on to patriot-place.com for more information. Patriot Place. Everyone wins. Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Hour number two inside the playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Again, thanks to Mike Perrini from Patriots Football Weekly for joining us in the opening hour of the program. Spent a little bit of time this hour with you as well. So if you have some thoughts on the Buffalo Bills game coming up, you can send us email webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. If you want to call, you can certainly do that. This is a game, as we kind of outlined already on Sunday, that the Patriots, at least if they fell a little short this past week against the Colts, the Patriots certainly have things at least stacked in their favor a bit for this week. Now, it doesn't mean that, you know, the law of averages won't catch up with this team. Because we did mention, I mean, the Patriots are trying to extend a string of nine straight wins over Buffalo, and that's extraordinary in this day and age of parity, as I was talking about in the opening hour today. That's an extraordinary thing to have happen. And you know, eventually, the law of average is going to catch up, and you know, not only will the Bills get one, they might even get two or three against the Patriots. You just hope that, you know, you can kind of put it off for as long as you can. And of course, when a guy like Tom Brady goes down and the Bills get off to a 5-0 start, as or 4-0 start as they did, you're thinking, well, maybe this is the year. And then again, somehow, some way, things have a way of just evening themselves out. And you find yourself now with a bit of an advantage, albeit slight, but maybe a bit of an advantage because you're playing at home this week. And the fact is the one thing that has been most consistent about the Patriots and their performances over the last few years is that they've never really let down after a loss. They've always been able to pick themselves back up. As witness, I mentioned the fact that they're 15-1 in games following a loss since 2003. So there's only been one back-to-back loss involved in there, and so you'd have to think that this bodes well for this week, that these guys are veteran guys and that they know how to sufficiently prepare and get ready for an opponent, you know, the opponent notwithstanding. The Buffalo Bills are a team, though, that have spent the last few years mired in mediocrity at best. And I think we all realize that. And so because of that, when you combine that with the fact that, you know, the Patriots playing at home have been, you know, devastating to most teams around the league, this does add up in their favor. And then you add to that some of the injury problems the Bills have had coming in. You can see where the Patriots, you know, would have at least an advantage on paper going in. But a divisional game. a rivalry game, for lack of a better phrase. And, you know, you may say what you want to about the fact that it's the Buffalo Bills and whether or not they are the true Patriots rivalry. I would call any of the divisional opponents a rival. I would throw Indianapolis in there as a rival simply because of the games that they have played over the last few years that have really meant something in the overall scheme of things. I would even throw Pittsburgh in there as a rival just because it seems like every time they play the Steelers, there's something on the line, kind of like the Colts. But divisional games, to me, those are the true rivalry games in the NFL. Cowboys-Redskins, Giants-Eagles, right? You know, and in this particular instance, Patriots-Jets, Patriots-Bills, Patriots-Dolphins. There's a history with each of those three teams. And when I think that players looking at a divisional opponent, I think I don't want to say that they have a lack of fire or a lack of emotion, but I think what they have is familiarity with the opponent. And so because there's familiarity, they leave no stone unturned in their preparation. And so I think you see guys play a little bit more close to the vest, because they know they've, and especially when it's the first time around to play a divisional opponent, they know that they have to face them again. I think you see a little bit more angst, maybe a little bit more anxiety, because these games mean double. I mean, after all, what's the first tiebreaker you go to if you're tied in the standings at the end of the season? You go to divisional record, record within your division. That's the first tiebreaker you go to. Well, head-to-head really is the first tiebreaker, but if everybody's tied, what do you go to? Well, then you go to divisional record. And that's why you have to win the games, as many of them as possible within the division, because it gives you a leg up on the other guys. And when you have to play a team twice in a year and there's more pressure on you to win because it's one of the first tiebreakers involved, well, then you get a sense then of the importance, and guys go about their business in a very serious way. Buffalo cannot... Buffalo cannot be taking the Patriots lightly in any stretch. First of all, they're not in a position to. Second of all, they've lost nine straight times. That's got to stick in their craw just a little bit. And they're going into a place that, you know, nobody has a whole lot of success in Gillette Stadium. And they're reeling a little bit because they've had some injuries. And so I'm sure the Buffalo Bills are anxious to show not only the Patriots but the rest of the NFL, certainly the AFC, but the rest of the NFL, that they are not a fluke for getting out to a 4-0 start. This is a game, as I suggested earlier to Mike, this is a game where if you are on the road and you are a true playoff/championship contender, you must find a way to win. You have to find a way to win it. That's what this team has to do. Buffalo has to find a way to win. And if they can find a way to win, then the guess is that, well, then, you know, they thrust themselves right back into the limelight, not only within the confines of the division, but certainly within the AFC and the NFL and the media and everybody that covers professional football for a living. The Buffalo Bills must be for real. This is a legitimizing game for Buffalo. It's a game that the Patriots should win, need to win, but is it a legitimizing win for the Patriots? And I would argue that no, it's not. Not yet. To me, what lies ahead for the Patriots, the legitimizing win, will come in game three of this three-game stretch when they go to Miami. Because for whatever reason, Miami now has stamped themselves a contender. They're 4-4, and they're only a game out of first. And this team that won all of one game a year ago whacked the Patriots by 20. Plus... And that made them a contender more than anything else. I'm not sure anybody really believed, because that was their first win of the year after two opening losses. But, you know, hey, they're 4-2 since those first two opening losses. And they have a resounding road win. They have a feather in their cap that the other teams in the division do not have. Not like that. So this is Buffalo's opportunity. And I think Buffalo probably will have a little bit more of that sense of urgency on their side, and they probably should have that. Whereas the Patriots will look at this a little bit more, I think, in business-like fashion. And the Patriots, obviously, you know, having won 9 in a row, I don't know what kind of an effect that will have on them. It hasn't had much of an effect to this point in time, but I hope that at least they are able to keep that in the back of their head and not let it affect them one way or the other. They have to treat every game as a single entity. Just so happens that they've strung 9 in a row together. Patriots are 49-10 at home at Gillette since 2002 when the stadium opened. That's the best home record in the entire league in that span of time. 49-10. That's what, 5 out of every 6 games. So they're, you know, they're basically going 7-1, 6-2 every year at home. Which, frankly, I think you should. I think you should do that. Especially if you're a team any good. Now, to me, a championship team also has to be at least 500, if not slightly above 500, on the road. So that means going 4-4 and probably 5-3. And you need to have a significant win somewhere. And so that's what Buffalo will be striving for this week. Should be interesting. Should be interesting. This week's game against the Bills, as we've mentioned, first of 3 straight in the AFC East. It's their first string of back-to-back-to-back, 3 straight against teams within the division in 7 seasons. They haven't done this since 2001. And over those 7 seasons, the Patriots are 36-10 against AFC East opponents. That's the best divisional record in the NFL. So they have the best home record and the best divisional record in the entire NFL over the last 6-7-plus years. Pittsburgh is second, by the way, in divisional records since 2001. 5 straight division championships, as we've talked about, most in the history of the AFL and the AFC East division since 1960. And, of course, the Patriots have won 6 out of the last 7 AFC East titles, trying to further their dominance over the Bills. And I guess part of what I was trying to go through here is to show that I'm not so sure it's going to be anywhere near as easy, and I'm sure you probably realize that, as it is apparently seemed to have been over the last few years. Throughout history, between these two teams, between the Patriots and the Bills, it has been a series that has featured some streaks. And the Patriots, by the way, lead the overall series with Buffalo 55 wins to 40. This is the 97th time that the Pats and the Bills will meet. Patriots have 55 wins over Buffalo. It's their most over any opponent in the entire league. The Jets are second most. I think the Patriots have 49 wins over the Jets. They've won 14 of the last 15 in this series over the Bills dating back to 2000. So it's clear that, you know, in this decade, the decade of the Patriots resurgence and winning 3 Super Bowl championships and everything else, you know, they have built some of their championships on the backs of the Buffalo Bills. That's why that kind of adds a little bit, to me anyway, it adds a little bit of intrigue into this game. See what Buffalo's made out of. And then let's see if the Patriots can respond. You know, it's always a measure of a team when someone, you know, whacks you around a little bit and you're able to respond and come back and whack them back in kind. And we haven't really seen that from Buffalo. Do we see that this Sunday? Patriots beat the Bills here last year 38-7. Complete and total walkover. An unmitigated complete and total walkover. And then, of course, winning by 46 points on the road. So, I mean, it's just been, you know, it was one-sided last year. And, of course, I think we realized both teams were different, although the Bills were still trending upward to the point where they started out this year at 4-0, and I kind of brought that up yesterday. Whereas the Patriots certainly don't have anywhere near the team right now that they had a year ago, although you can see flashes. I think the offensive line is getting nearer to where they were a year ago. We don't have the quarterback. We don't have the offensive backfield. I think we still have the receivers, but we don't have the quarterback to get to the receivers, apparently, or at least the coaching staff is not allowing the quarterback to get to the receivers as they should, and I think that's a fundamental problem right now. We've got to see more downfield strikes, especially against teams that are banged up in the secondary, and here's another team in Buffalo that's going to be banged up in the secondary again, and, you know, what's going to happen? Can the Patriots take advantage of it? To me, that's one of the big question marks to this entire game this Sunday. And frankly, it's one of the reasons that's keeping me from just jumping right on the Patriot bandwagon for this week and saying, ah, Patriots, they should win this game easy. See, I don't know. I don't know. I've got some doubt in the back of my head right now because I just don't know what kind of a philosophy that this offense is going to undertake. Are they going to try to do the same thing they did this last week against the Colts? I mean, yeah, they had four scoring drives, you know, of what, each over 14 plays, I think it was this last week. That's great. But it really doesn't mean much when you're only getting three instead of seven. Patriots are so soft in the red zone on both ends, offense and defense. They had a chance to improve themselves and help themselves in offense, and what do? They call a timeout, and they kick a field goal. I ranked on about that yesterday, and I'm going to have a hard time getting over that one because it was just so and I think I said this, it was so un-Belichickian. It just was. It was not like him, and it was not like this team. And so that has planted a seed of doubt in my head, not only about their ability to make the right call, but about their ability to believe that their team can convert and score a touchdown in the red zone. The coaching staff cut the offense's feet out from underneath them on that call. And so until they have a chance to prove that they can do it, there's going to be a bit of doubt in their heads. That's one of the lingering effects, I fear, you know, from this past Sunday, that, you know, something that you just don't need to be dealing with when you're going into a crucial stretch like you're getting ready to go into right now. All right, since I'm kind of dealing with the offense just a little bit, you may not have had an opportunity to check this out yet, but I thought we'd take a minute here just to play some of this. Josh McDaniels, of course, as we all know, is the Patriots offense coordinator, and he had a chance to meet with members of the media on Tuesday this week. And I don't know if you've played the sound or not. If you have, I apologize for that. Just fast forward in the podcast. But to me, we don't get enough chance to listen to what he thinks about, you know, philosophy offensively and play calling and personnel groupings and why some of the calls are made that are made. And so I'm not entirely certain this will shed a tremendous amount of light on that, but it always does me good in order to find out what page he is on as opposed to the pages that you and I and the rest of us who cover this team are on, and whether and why we're apart. And if we are apart, how far apart are we in terms of our thinking? And maybe if we are away from where he's thinking, how far apart are we and why are we apart? So I want to understand a little bit more. So I'm going to take a few minutes here to let you listen into the conference call that Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels had with members of the media.
Josh, just curious your thoughts going back to Sunday night's game against the Colts. It seemed like Matt Cassel did a lot of good things. From his performance, what would be the one thing you felt he did really well, if you put one thing atop the list?
I thought he really had a good sense of timing as far as the pass rush was concerned, something that we've been working hard on in terms of just trying to feel the right time to either leave the pocket or stay in the pocket. You know, he did a nice job of stepping up a few times, waiting for the route to unfold or develop. Didn't leave the pocket unnecessarily, and you know, and then he did make some plays where he did scramble out of the pocket when it was necessary to do so, and I think that that's improving every week, and it was something that showed up, you know, on Sunday night.
Josh, when Matt becomes better at that as he has, how much does that help him with the other parts of his game?
Well, I just think it allows him, you know, when you start to get a strong feel for sense of timing and the feel for the rush, it gives you you know, that added extra second to keep your eyes down the field and see the coverage and you know, people that may be coming open a little later in your progression, you have an opportunity to use that full progression and go to the second or third read, you know, when you're standing in there comfortably in the pocket. And I just, over the last two or three weeks here, it's really started to pay some dividends for him. He hit a number of second or third reads a couple weeks ago, and then that carried over into this game. So I just think it opens up more of the offense and allows him to move past the first or second read if they happen to be covered, and get the ball into someone's hands who's open that you know, obviously, you know, you may not start with on the particular play, but because you keep the play alive and have good poise in the pocket, you know, you get to get him the ball.
Josh, is there an example from this last game where he did that? Is there one that stood out for you?
Yeah, there was a third down play where he ended up coming to Gaffney on a comeback. Wasn't the first read. There was a little bit of pressure from our right side, and he did a nice job of hanging in there. He just kind of stepped subtly to his left, didn't leave the pocket, didn't pull the ball down to run, kept the play alive, allowed Jabbar to run his route at the right depth. Jabbar made a good move at the top of the route, got open, and, you know, he threw a nice ball in the comeback, and we converted a third down. So that was just one example, and I thought it was an important play, and it was a play that, again, that he's improved and now is capable of making.
I'm curious, the ball over the middle to Welker on, I think it was 3rd and 11 in the fourth quarter, that nearly hit the ref but hit him in stride. Was that his first read on that play?
In the red area, is one in the red zone where it ended up as 4th and 1?
Yeah.
It ended up 4th and 1? Yep. Yeah, well, you know, there's it depends on the coverage on plays like that. Sometimes when they drop off and play very soft, as they did on that particular play, then, you know, we try to get it to somebody that has an opportunity to catch and run and try to get the first down with their legs instead of always trying to throw it behind them. So they were playing a little softer on that one, and, you know, he came to West quick. And that referee is always an issue, you know, on some of those underneath-type routes because of where he's standing. And, you know, there's been plays in the past where we've hit him. There's been plays in the past where, you know, the receiver crosses behind him and loses sight of the ball, and just so happened that the official got down just in time, and West made a nice catch. It takes a lot of concentration to do that because that guy's always going to be standing somewhere in that vicinity, and West kept his eye on the ball, and it was a good throw and catch.
Josh, can you take us back to how the plays with Falk sort of were born? Were you guys, was that something you did this week, or was it something you've had in for a while?
It's something that, you know, whenever you go into a game and you want to try to take a variety of different runs into a game plan, which we normally do, and you know, we ran plenty of draws the other night. We ran plenty of schemes that were very similar. And so that was just an added way for us to run a similar play against a defense that we felt like those plays were good against. So it really wasn't something we've been working on for a long time. It was just something that we felt gave us an added element to the game plan, another thing for another thing for them to defend, and you know, we'll see where it goes. You know, there's no telling, you know, if we'll use it again or not. We may not. Depends on how we feel about it.
I'm sure you guys...
go ahead.
Hey, John, go for it.
I was just going to say, why do you think teams, I don't know, maybe it's my imagination, but certainly Miami has been doing a lot of it with Ronnie Brown, and we saw Flacco catch a pass a couple weeks ago. Why do you think teams are doing more of that kind of thing, splitting their quarterbacks out and letting somebody else handle the ball?
I think it's a, you know, in terms of your preparation, you know, and I would speak offensively from our point of view, whenever a defense does something that's a little different, you know, you have to make a decision and a choice of how much time to spend on that. It may not be something that they've done very much of, but you still have to make a decision and a choice of how much practice time and how much preparation time you need to spend on that element of their game during the course of the week. And, you know, obviously Miami's running a lot of it, or at least a significant portion of it. And, you know, some of these other teams that are filtering it through, now defenses, you know, we're going to have to decide, all right, how much time do we put towards this? And, you know, are we going to check if they get in it? Are we going to run all of our calls? Are we going to, you know, get out of calls and get into something different? You know, how are we going to defend that if they happen to, you know, to use it against us? So I think it's something that people are doing. And if they don't have any success, I'm sure you're not going to see much of it again, which is probably why you've seen it more and more from Miami, because they seem to be successful with it. So, you know, you run it, and you make the other team worry about it during the course of the week, and that's part of coaching and preparation, and it's a pain in the butt sometimes when people do things a very few number of times, but you still have to prepare and spend practice reps on them, and then that's time that you're not spending on something that they may do a lot more. So, you know, there's two sides to the coin, and I think you just, you know, if you can get it to work for you, it's great, and if not, then, you know, at least the other team's got to defend it.
Has Matt been lobbying to catch some balls?
Not really. I think he's a lot more comfortable under center or in the shotgun throwing the ball than he is catching it. So, you know, I think Tommy's I think he may have only caught one ball in his career. So, you know, we're not in a hurry to throw those guys the ball. We'd prefer them throwing it.
Josh, when you look at the red zone, I'm sure, you know, you'd want better production than the 1 of 4. Although one of the trips, you just sort of snuck into the red zone and then were sort of bumped out of there. But when you look at it, what's the common thread there to you, you know, other than simply, you know, making the plays? I mean, is there one aspect that could have improved those numbers in your mind?
Yeah, Mike, we really, on two of those trips, we had a zero-yard run and a negative pass. And that really, anytime you get into a third down and long scenario in the red zone, you're already short field to work with because you don't have a lot of field behind them. And when you get into a situation like, you know, as we already talked about, third and 11 down there at the 18 or, you know, 19-yard line, it's tough to run a lot of patterns past the sticks unless you're going to throw it to the back of the end zone, which, you know, we all know those plays are lower percentage anyway. So I think, you know, in our minds, if we stay ahead on the down and distance, if we get positive plays and get into third and short down there in the red zone, you know, then you got a greater chance to succeed on third down. And on two of those trips, unfortunately, we fell into third and more than 10. And those are, I mean, you only convert third and 10 plus, you know, an entire season, you know, maybe 8-10 times a year. And to try to convert them in the red zone, it makes it even more difficult. So we just got to do a really good job of trying to do what we did the rest of the game, which is avoid negative plays, you know, no penalties, no negative runs, and try to stay ahead on down and distance. And I think we'll see some better numbers down there in the red zone, which obviously we're going to strive towards.
Josh, what was in the fourth quarter where you were setting up for a fourth and one, and then Bill called timeout and went for the field goal? What was the dialogue like on the sideline there? Why the switch?
You know, we sent the play in originally, and, you know, down there at the end of the field, you always have it's always a little bit more difficult to tell exactly how much you need. And if they don't measure and you don't really get an indication from the official, how much you actually need for the first down, you know, it's kind of a harder angle from the press box. And obviously, you know, down the sideline, unless we run all the way down there, you know, it's difficult to tell there too. So we sent the play in originally. I think, you know, we were thinking it was much less than a yard, and we're ready to go with our, you know, the best play we felt like we had. And, you know, after we broke the huddle and the ball was spotted, we got a better look at it. And Bill ran down there and decided to call a timeout just to take some more time to, you know, make a smart decision, the best decision we could make at the time. Obviously, it was a crucial play. So, you know, and after it was decided that it was at least a yard, you know, or very close to it, you know, just felt better about kicking the field goal and trying to, you know, play defense and then get the ball back and try to have, you know, success on offense when we got it back, which we'd done most of the game and we were doing the next time we got it, you know, until we ran into the penalty situation and got into a third and long. So, you know, I mean, in hindsight, it's, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, would we have got it? I don't know. You know, but we made a choice. We tied the game up and definitely had a good enough chance to win it after that. So, you know, it was a decision you make. And
I mean, it's a big game. And
when can you ask for a measurement?
You can request a measurement. You can request a measurement, and usually they grant it. I'm not sure of the exact ruling or how close it needs to be or what have you, but as long as it's within reason, I believe that they'll give you a measurement in that situation. You know, and at that time, I think Bill went down there and saw it for himself, and once the ball was spotted and the pile was cleared, you know, we had already had our personnel kind of out there on the field, and we also got a little bit better look at it from the press box. So, you know, you can request it, but I'm not exactly sure, you know, as far as the rule is concerned, how close it needs to be in order for them to grant it.
on those kind of plays, you've often run, and it looked like you were running it when the ball was snapped, the QB sneak, and Tom obviously was fantastic at those. What is it about a quarterback? What kind of skills do you have to squeeze out those, you know, yard and a half or whatever it takes on those fourth and shorts?
Yeah, you have to have, I think really and truly, and Tommy, as you mentioned, was really successful at it, and Matt's had some success this year doing it as well. I think you have to have a really good feel for where to go because you don't have long to make a decision. You know, and we kind of know where we want to go, and once the ball snaps, you got to kind of burrow yourself in there, and you can't go down to the ground. You know, you got to actually kind of push, you know, that soft spot wherever it may be, if it's to the right of the center or to the left of the center, and really try to push in there and keep your legs moving and driving. And we got tall guys at quarterback that have long legs, and they got to continue to do that. And Tom was very good at it, and Matt's getting better every week when we use it. You know, he's doing a good job of finding that soft spot and actually, you know, making the yard or yard and a half that he needs to get in order to get the first down. So I think it's more of a feel thing. Once you know which direction you're headed in, you got to try to stay upright and really, you know, get in there behind the center and the guard and try to push out a yard.
Josh, just to wrap it up, the long passing game, there was just watching the game over again, John Madden was talking quite a bit on just the idea of opening it up, and I was just hoping you could go back to what the Colts were doing or how they stress an offense that would, you know, why that might be possible or what you'd have to give up to do that, and maybe just some of your thinking as the play caller as to maybe why the ball wasn't going down the field more in that game.
I think the Colts, you know, just talking about them specifically, you know, the first thing you gotta understand or take into consideration when you're trying to get the ball down the field against any team is how much time you need to throw it. And the Colts obviously have a significant pass rush, very good pass rushers. And so you have to make a determination whether that's a big part of your game plan or not. And the way that they play, they're a zone team. They got a lot of defensive backs and linebackers looking at the quarterback on most snaps. They're very rarely in man coverage. And so when you got a lot of people back deep trying to make you throw it in front of them, and they're looking at the quarterback and trying to read where the ball is going to be thrown, and then they're all trying to, you know, get to the ball at the same time, that's sometimes a little bit more difficult. They were rolling the coverage to Randy most of the night, putting a corner up near him, putting a safety up high behind him. You know, and in past years against the Colts, you know, you gotta really pick your spots. And you know, we hit one last year on them to Randy in the game in 07, but had two others that we were trying to force down the field picked off, you know. And in 06, it was very similar. We tried to throw the ball down the field a few times and didn't have very good success doing it either. So, you know, it's a combination of the pass rush, how much time you need to hold it to throw the ball down there, what they're playing to try to take a certain player away, and, you know, and how much success you think you're really going to have throwing it when there's people that are always significantly in the deep part of the field. So, you know, we had a shot, you know, later in the game where we put Randy in the slot and the safety happened to overplay inside and had a chance to hit Gaff up the sideline and it just didn't work out. But, you know, in every game is different. You know, you gotta gauge how much time you have to protect, you know, what openings they give you based on the coverages that they play. And how smart it is really to take those risks and those chances in the type of game that it may be.
All right, so there's Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator for the Patriots, meeting with members of the media yesterday via a conference call. And again, just a little bit of insight. I think Josh, and I will, you know, go right along in line with most everybody else that drinks the Kool-Aid or the alleged Kool-Aid in Foxborough, that I think he is a brilliant offensive mind. So much learning potential there still to come from a guy like McDaniels. There's no question that at some point in time he could be a head coach, and certainly currently head coaching material in the NFL. But, you know, when he had a chance to move on and he decided he needed more seasoning a year ago, could not agree more. And I think we're learning now that there's still some seasoning to go based on some of the play calling that we've seen thus far, and
they're being so careful with Matt Cassel and not to overextend him and put him in a position where he ultimately can't succeed. And I would almost tend now to push the envelope a little bit more with Matt and at least give him an opportunity to sort of break out of his shell somewhat now that we've seen he can handle game planning and he can handle game management. We've seen that, and I want to see a little bit more now because, as we all know, you can't stand pat in this league. When you stand pat, you get killed. So it's time to push the envelope, and that's really the only little qualm that I would have. But you cannot argue with the previous success and overall with the big picture where he's concerned and where the Patriots offense is concerned. And so just want to provide a little insight like that. And he's very well spoken, and you know whether or not you agree with what he has to say, fact is, he has the courage of his convictions. He believes what he's doing and the plays he's calling and who he's calling them for. He believes those calls to be the correct ones. And a lot of that comes from above, from Coach Belichick. He wouldn't give him the free rein to do that if Belichick did not have the, you know, utmost in confidence in him. So I think this is a learning experience right now for everybody because, frankly, he's had a little bit of a silver, you know, spoon put in his mouth, so to speak, here with a guy like Tom Brady at quarterback. Now he's having to earn it a little bit more with a guy like Matt Cassel at quarterback, who's certainly capable, and we've seen that. Matt has done more than just manage games. He's put the team in position to win games. Now let's push the envelope. I think that's all we're asking for here. Let's see what else we can get out of the guy. And I don't think he's going to regress, and I don't think he's going to take a big step back if he, you know, doesn't connect on a couple of the long distance plays. Heck, I'd settle for looking for the tight end, which doesn't seem to be a current part of the offense. Does it? No. I'd settle for looking for the tight end. By the way, say what you want to about David Thomas and the call, the penalty last week that knocked them out of a potential field goal spot, and it was just, you know, it was a, you know, it tough call, no question. He right now is a much better pass catcher than Benjamin Watson. I'm sorry, I've seen it now for the better part of 2 years, and obviously go back a little ways with Thomas because I'm playing in Texas, but right now in terms of the ability to catch a football, I don't know what Watson's doing, but he didn't have it out there right now. I've seen him stumbling and bumbling, and you know, he may have all this physical ability, which I think we've seen in flashes, but he's never really been able to put it together. Not to the extent that I think we all kind of expected. And we've seen, you know, Thomas lay out for balls. And frankly, there's a thought process that Thomas is at least as good, if not a little bit better, blocker than Watson. So when David Thomas is out there, I want to see him get the ball more. Guy can catch the ball. Let's throw it to him. That's the one suggestion that I would have for a guy like Josh anyway. We're going to get to the Bills conference calls on tomorrow's program. Doesn't look like we're going to be able to get them turned around to in time as they're just now kind of wrapping up. Dick Geron and company, and I believe Trent Edwards is the Bills player, We'll have that for you on tomorrow's program. So just a little programming note here as we are entering the last 10 to 12 minutes of today's playbook. But what we will do here in just a couple of minutes is we do have some Patriots interviews from the locker room today at the end of practice that just wrapped up a short while ago. Kevin Faulk, Dan Copen, Delta O'Neill, Mike Vrabel, and the newcomer, Mr. Webster, are all going to be heard from here in short order. More on the Patriots and Bills for this week. We mentioned, of course, that the Patriots have won 9 straight against Buffalo. But November the 9th, I mean, we're basically now 1 week into the second half of the season. This is the latest that these two teams have met for their first time this year since 1998, latest in a decade. Seems like we've always kind of opened up the season or played very, very early in the season against Buffalo. And a lot of times they're in Buffalo, right? Not this year. Patriots have held the Bills to a touchdown or less in 5 of the last 8 games these two teams have played against each other. That's extraordinary. I think it shows you not so much how dominant the Patriots defense can be. What it shows you is how really pathetic the Bills offense has been and how they've struggled for so long. and how they were searching for some kind of consistency, and they finally got it in a guy like Edwards. And I've been reading some stories this week, both not only out of Boston but out of Buffalo, how Trent Edwards was a guy on the Patriots' radar in the draft a couple of years ago. But the Bills ended up taking him in a round before the Patriots were prepared to select him. I think the Patriots might have selected him in the fourth round had he not been taken, but the Bills took him in the third, and so that's why he's obviously in Buffalo. But it's pretty easy to see why the Patriots also would have had their sights set on a guy like that. He has done a remarkable job. He's done a pretty solid job in taking over the quarterback spot for Buffalo. Patriots and Bills have played 19 games decided by 3 points or fewer since 1972. That's kind of my stat for the day. And I say that only because even though the Patriots romped twice over the Bills a year ago, that was last year. This is this year. And both teams, again, even though the Bills have struggled of late, losing three out of the last four, they are definitely in an upswing and an uptick over this time a year ago. Whereas the Patriots are definitely a step behind where they were a year ago for obvious reasons. And so this means that, you know, for games that mean a lot, as we've talked about and will continue to talk about, which this does, you know, being an AFC East matchup, and each team needs to get a leg up on the other, and the Bills can't afford to go 0-3 within the division and all that kind of stuff. And, of course, the Patriots can't afford to lose a home divisional game because they've already lost one to Miami. Fact is that, you know, a close game should be expected on Sunday. 19 games since 1972 with the Bills decided by 3 points or fewer. So keep that in mind for Sunday. In fact, these two teams have played in 5 overtime games since 1993. I'm not sure it'll be an overtime game, but I can certainly see this game being in doubt going into the fourth quarter. And I think that's where we'll all be thankful that the Patriots certainly have home field advantage coming up on Sunday. And you hope that, you know, you can rely on, you know, the fans or what have you, the home crowd, to be able to kind of take you in at that point and give you some opportunities to win the football game. So, you know, I mean, the last time these two teams played in Buffalo, it was 56-10 for the Pats. We mentioned they won at Gillette 38-7 last year, a couple of big-time routes. The guys on this Buffalo team who remain from last year, which would be certainly the majority of them, undoubtedly have had this date circled on their calendar. And as they got out to a hot start this year, I'm sure it was something they were sort of looking forward to. And now they realize that it's here, and even though they've stumbled lately, there's no doubt in my mind they will be as ready as they possibly can be. Will the Patriots be able to be as ready as the Bills are? See, to me, I think that's certainly one of the big questions going into the game on Sunday. No question in my mind. No question in my mind. We'll spend some time, obviously, tomorrow looking back over the Buffalo Bills and taking a look at some of the nitty-gritty, some of the X's and the O's with the matchups. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly will be in studio tomorrow, and I'm happy to be able to rejoin him for the first time in a couple of Thursdays anyway, since I've been away on college football travel. But we'll be in studio tomorrow for that. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator, will be joining us, as he always does on Thursdays, not only to look at the Patriots-Bills game, but the upcoming week, Week 10. Week 10 in the National Football League. Yep, already Week 10. So we'll jump around all of that good stuff on Thursday's program for you. Gary, are we all okay with the... Okay, excellent. Let's get you off in then inside the Patriots locker room again with Falk, Copen, O'Neill, Vrabel, and Webster, the newest of the New England Patriots, re-signed today after the Patriots put Sean Crable on the injured reserve list. That was the news of the day made by the football team. And then we'll come back at you same Pat time, same Pat's channel on Thursday.
Kevin, can you talk a little bit about the trend from last year and his kind of more confidence in the on offense this year?
To be honest, I'm focusing on their defense. All I know is that he's playing well. That's about it.
Obviously, every game
being important throughout the season, but this one, the Buffalo Bills, is kind of like your biggest challenge in the division for the supremacy that's probably this team has.
We look at every team in our division as a challenge for us because, you know, we play them each and every year, twice a year, and, you know, that's the team that knows best.
Kevin, can you talk about the AFC East as a whole, how each team is close one game out here or there, you know, and it's become very competitive?
I think that's what you want. You want the games to be that important, you know, close. And the teams are, you know, every team is good right now, so we just have to take one step at a time and play one team at a time and not worry about the other team before it's that time.
Thinking about their defense, what about their defense that concerns you? What are the things you want to look out for?
Well, they got new additions to the team. They got Stroud. They got Kyle Williams, who's been there a couple of years from LSU, that they're playing real well inside. They got Kavika Mitchell that's playing the wheel back. And, you know, they just changed the defense up a little bit.
Kevin, how does your approach change now? It seems like, you know, before you didn't have to be the lead running back. It seems like now that you have to kind of be that guy. Is your preparation approach changed at all now?
Nah, because as a player, you have to approach each game like you're the starter no matter what. If you're the backup or where you are in the lineup, you have to approach that way because you never can tell what's going to happen.
How you and Ben Jarvis also are working together pretty well right now to fill in the gaps for other people? Is it, obviously, you know, it's something you have to do, you have to step up, but is there anything that he's done that kind of impresses you so far as a young player?
Well, he's a very smart player. He understands, you know, what we're trying to accomplish, and he's just doing his job. He's not trying to do too much.
I mean, it's a big game, and they're all big games, so, you know, Buffalo's a great opponent and great defense, a great team, and, you know, playing well right now. So, you know, it's not a different feel.
How about this stretch, kind of three division games in a two-week stretch? How important is this?
I mean, it's important, but, you know, they're all important, and division games are important regardless when you're playing in the season. So, you know, we got a big run coming up here, but, you know, hopefully we can just hunker down and play some good football and see where it lands.
How is this Bills defense different maybe than what you've seen in past years?
Yeah, you know, they got some new faces in there, obviously, but, you know, a lot of the guys are there, and, you know, they're good players. I mean, we know that, and they got a good scheme, and they're well coached, so, you know, it's going to be a big test for us this week.
Stroud, a guy that you'll be man up with a lot in this game?
Yeah, whoever they put in there, they put in there. You know, whatever they decide to do, you know, they're all good, and we got to worry about all of them. You know, it's not just Stroud. Kyle Williams, a heck of a football player. You know, the DNs with Denny and Kelsey. You know, we don't know about Schoble, but, you know, they're all good.
Guys, been cutting down on sacks the last couple of weeks. How do you think you're doing overall with that, and how do you think Matt's growing and getting comfortable in the pocket?
I hope he's getting more comfortable. You know, we're trying to, you know, do our job and give him the time back there he needs. But, you know, he's been playing better and better every week, and it's our job to keep him clean, you know, like it is every year, every week. Doesn't matter the opponent. Just, you know, we got to do our job up front for him to do his. And, you know, hopefully he can continue to grow and, you know, make plays.
Can you sense his confidence growing, though? It seems like it's evident to us as we watch. You're in the huddle. Can you feel it growing from him?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's not hard to see, you know, with what he's doing out on the field. You know, he's putting us in position to win games, and, you know, that's his job, and, you know, we're going to be behind him.
Is this where you also really rely on the system and the coaching to, if we do what the coaches tell us, no matter who's in there, we're going to still have a degree of success?
You know, all the guys that are here, they're here for a reason. You know, they got picked up here because they have some kind of talent and they can play football. So, you know, the coaching can only help us. You know, it can't set us backwards. You know, we just got to prepare better for games, you know, because it's a tough stretch, the last, you know, eight games that we have. So, you know, it's just we just got to prepare better.
I don't know if we had a chance to talk to you after the St. Louis game when you left for most of the game and came back for that interception. What was that experience like for you, being on the sidelines and then coming in and almost having a game-saving play?
I was more so, you know, I wanted to get back in, but, you know, due to the circumstances that happened, I didn't. And when my name was called upon, you know, anything to help my team, you know, be successful and win, you know, I just, you know, laid it out there and, you know, I fell in the right place at the right time.
How did you feel, you know, being out there last week?
Oh, no, not at all. You know, it's just unfortunate we didn't win, and, You know, it was a good game down to the end, you know, and it seemed like most of the games has been like that throughout the year. So, you know, we just got to find a way to win. For the most part, we've been doing a great job at it.
You have three straight games against division opponents. Obviously, the Buffalo's a priority because that's the next one. But playing three straight games in a division this tight, I mean, everyone's within one game. Yeah, can you consider this, you know, like a make-or-break stretch right now?
Nah, man, we look at it as a one-game season, you know, and this week we have Buffalo, and that's our main focus. We can't worry about if Miami beats the Jets or vice versa. You know, we just got to, you know, concentrate on what we got ahead, you know, this week. So we're just going to stay focused on that and, you know, get well prepared for this game, and hopefully we'll turn out with a W. He's fast, you know, he can catch well, you know, the quarterback and the receiver, their timing is on point right now, and he's an explosive receiver, so, you know, you got to be on top of your game, or, you know, he can get you.
Can you talk a little bit about Edwards being more confident?
Who is this?
Edwards.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, it's the more you play, the more confidence you get, you know, if you're just sitting around watching and getting a, you know, the backup role, you don't really get that that chemistry with your team, and you know, it just seems like he has that, and you know, he's a great, he's good, you know, you can't knock that. Like I said before, you know, anybody in the NFL that's in the league has some type of ability that got them there, so you know, he's good at what he does. You just,
well, I mean, they certainly have a lot of weapons, and you know, I think if you let Edwards just stand back there. You know, I've seen him reel off 12 or 14 passes in a row and be real efficient. You know, I think it starts with them, with the running backs. I mean, they get, you know, two great backs. I mean, you think you get plenty with Lynch, and then you get more with Jackson coming in there, and sometimes they're in the game together. You know, Evans is tough, and, you know, the tight ends are active in the passing game. So, we know that, you know, we're going to have a good test. And they always do something, you know, pretty specific for us, and change things up every time they play us.
To a lot of the league and pundits and fans, the Buffalo Bills are a real surprise this year. But to you guys, knowing their team, are they a surprise that they're playing as well as they are?
Well, I mean, I think they got a, you know, it starts with them, with the head coach. I think Coach Duran's done a great job. He's put in a good program, built a foundation, and you know, they've drafted well. They've got some good veteran guys. They got a good line. They got two good tackles. You know, so when you start, and you know, and really, I'm not going to evaluate the defense. I don't see them, but I know that they're, you know, they make a lot of plays and turn the ball over for them.
And evaluating your own team, how close are you to where you expect to be?
No, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like it'd be a question for the head coach. I mean, I just try to worry about myself and, you know, try to improve each week and get, you know, get the guys that you know, I play with, the linebackers and the D-line, you know, on the same page.
Mike, you mentioned Edwards. He's obviously taken a step forward this year. How much of the improvement overall in the division has to do with improved quarterback play?
Well, I mean, I think that any time a team, you know, goes out and plays well or wins by a few touchdowns, it's usually because they, you know, either had a lot of turnovers or scored on defense or scored in special teams, or, you know, the quarterback, you know, played really well. And for them, you know, they play special teams great. You know, Greer's got two interception returns for a touchdown, and Edwards has been efficient. So I think they've done and they've covered all three of those things.
Mike, Bill has talked a lot this week about the size and the physicality of their offensive line. Coming into this game, what are the ways to attack it or counter it or prepare for it?
Well, I mean, I think you just have to play, you know, play square up front, play tough up front, you know, play with your hands. Don't try to run around blocks and create, you know, big seams and big gaps. You know, so they've got guys that, you know, that latch on and try to block in. They've got good runners that cut off and, you know, are good cutback runners.
You mentioned the running game early on. Is this a team that will come right at you to try to establish that? Or?
Well, I mean, I think that they're going to run the ball, like I said, on their terms. And we've seen different runs and we've seen different cutback runs. And, you know, I'm sure it's not going to be the same as we've seen in the past. And they'll run their carryover runs, but then they'll have, you know, something that's new to us and, you know, that they're working on right now. Well, I think what's important is this week against Buffalo. I think that, you know, really, you know, and everything after that really doesn't matter much. And I would imagine that the, you know, the Bills are, you know, thinking the same thing. You know, we haven't played them yet this year. We've played a lot of like opponents, so it's like we've seen them on film a lot. I'm sure they've seen us on film. And, you know, now it's our time to match up on Sunday.
What's that trend last year in your mind? What's the biggest improvement he's made that you you've seen just from, you know, watching the games in the AFC?
Well, this from last year, I think he's just picked up from what he did last year. He built on some of the things he did well last year, you know, reading coverages and throwing the ball to the open receiver.
How do you think some of their younger guys growing up, other than Trent, some of their younger guys kind of growing up and they were kind of finding their way the last couple of years?
Yeah. It just seems like it. They all know what they're supposed to do, and they're all doing it. The thing that I noticed last year, this year versus last year they were a good team, but it doesn't seem like they have as much have as many injuries on the roster as they had last year.
When you were in Buffalo, what was the sense of here? Did you feel like this was the team everybody in the division was trying to catch? This was what you had to kind of aspire to if you wanted to be competitive in the division?
Well, yeah, it wasn't hard to see that. You know, they're winning games. And when you win games, everybody's looking to see exactly what that team is doing to win games. And it's kind of like a target that teams put on you.
So were the Patriots like the measuring stick for the other teams in the division?
Because they were winning and they were at the top. And if everyone else didn't have as many wins as they did, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like conditioning-wise you could step in and contribute this weekend? I mean, however many series of plays. I mean, how much do you feel you could play and contribute this weekend?
I'm going to work one day at a time. And we'll see day by day.
Jason, just when you left here, I mean, was the time beneficial for you to heal up? Or when you left here, had you already healed? And it was just kind of the time ran out for you to show what you could do?
Yes and no. I was pretty much healed, but it wasn't in, football form to be able to show what I could do.